What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is the art of being well. What's up, and welcome to The Art of Being Well. I am a leading functional medicine expert. I get to consult people around the world via webcam, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote Intuitive Fasting, which is my newest book, and The Inflammation Spectrum, and Ketotarian. If you want to learn more about my clinical work, the telehealth center, the books, and there's lots of free resources there for you as well, you can check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners of The Art of Being Well, we are giving away free signed books of your choice. All you have to do is head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well. Tell me what you love about the show. And no matter when you listen to this episode, every month, my team and I will be going through the Apple Podcasts review and randomly picking winners every month. So you can do it two different ways. You can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review itself, or you can screenshot the Apple Podcast review and message me over on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole and show me the screenshot there. And either way, we'll be going through our messages on social as well as on the Apple Podcast review themselves and randomly picking winners. All right, good luck. All right, let's get to today's guest. His name is Chris Kresser. He is the co-founder of the California Center for Functional Medicine, the founder of Kresser Institute, the host of the top-ranked health podcast, Revolution Health Radio, and the creator of ChrisKresser.com, and the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Cure and Unconventional Medicine. He is one of the most respected clinicians and educators in the fields of functional medicine and ancestral health, and has trained over 2,000 clinicians and health coaches from over 50 countries in his unique approach. Chris was named one of the 100 most influential people in health and fitness by Greatest.com and has appeared as a featured guest on Dr. Oz, Time, The Atlantic, NPR, Fox and Friends, and other national media outlets. He has recently launched Adapt Naturals, a supplement line designed to add back in what the modern world has squeezed out and help people perform and feel their best. Stay tuned through the entire conversation because at the end, I'll answer another one of your burning health questions in an Ask Me Anything. All right, this is Chris Kresser's Art of Being Well. Chris Kresser, man, it's been too long.
Well, Cole, it has been too long. I miss you. Miss talking to you.
I know, man. I mean, besides the pandemic, I mean, it probably is just a time warp that was the pandemic. It just
I mean, you didn't even know I was in Park City. We've been here for almost 3 years.
This is a sad state of affairs.
Moved to Park City. Normally, we'd be seeing each other at conferences and things like that. That's typically where we hang out. But yeah, there was really none of that the past few years.
No, there wasn't. And everybody can relate to this right now. But let's jump right into it. Let's talk about nutrient density, that term nutrient density. I want people to get why it's so important and why that term should be a front of mind when it comes to how they live their life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've, as you know, I've been doing this work for almost 15 years, and I really come to believe that this is like the primary issue related to nutrition, at least. There are lots of other important issues, movement, stress management, sleep, et cetera. But when we're talking about food, this is really the thing everybody should be thinking about most. And when we say nutrient density, we're referring to the concentration of micronutrients and amino acids in particular. You know, the topic of macronutrients and protein and carbohydrates and fat is an interesting one and definitely a discussion worth having that you have had, I'm sure, many times. But today we're talking about micronutrients, which means vitamins, minerals, and essential amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins, of course, in a given food. And a really important distinction when it comes to talking about nutrient density is that it can mean different things in the conventional nutrition world and then in the, like, let's say, functional medicine, ancestral health nutrition world. So in the conventional world, nutrient density means foods that are really high in nutrients but low in saturated fat and calories. In other words, a food is penalized if it has saturated fat in it or if it's higher in calories. Whereas in the ancestral health community, functional medicine space, we recognize that in some cases, very nutrient-dense foods can actually contain some saturated fat and they can be higher in calories, but still be very, very dense in nutrition. And I think that's an important thing to understand right off the top because it changes how we would rank different foods on the nutrient density scale.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And I see it just looking at labs 11 hours a day, the amount of nutrient deficiencies, it's ubiquitous to say the least. So what are the most...
And your patients, Will, and mine are not the average people. Like these
Good
are
point.
Folks... Yeah,
Good
these
point.
Are folks who are paying attention in general. I mean, I shouldn't speak for you. I don't know as much about your patient population, but I have a guess that they have a higher level of nutrition awareness than the average American.
100%. That's my thought is like, I'm seeing 95% of them or more are eating way better than the average American, but are still struggling with nutrient deficiencies according to the labs. So I can only imagine what we are facing as a society. The people aren't listening to health podcasts. So what are the most common nutrient deficiencies that are out there?
Yeah, great question. And a little bit more difficult to answer than you might imagine at first glance. So I'm going to give you the statistics that we do have, and then I'm going to give you a caveat that suggests that actually, as horrific as these statistics are, they're underestimating nutrient deficiencies. So according to the NHANES data, the Nurses' Health Study, which I'm sure you're aware of and many of your listeners have heard about before, it's a long-running study that assessed a whole bunch of different health variables in a group of nurses, including nutrient status. And according to those data, 100% of Americans don't get enough potassium. 100%. It must be that there's a couple people that do, but they're rounding up 99.99% to 100%. 94% don't get enough vitamin D, 92% choline, 89% vitamin E, 67% vitamin K, 52% magnesium, 44% calcium, 43% vitamin A, and 39% vitamin C. So, I mean, just right there, that tells us that the majority of Americans are not only deficient in one nutrient, they're deficient in multiple nutrients.
Right.
But here's why I think that even these numbers are underestimates. These numbers are based on the recommended dietary allowance, or the RDA, right? The RDA for most of these nutrients was established as a means of determining how much we need to eat to avoid an acute disease state, like scurvy for vitamin C, rickets, something like that. The RDA is not the amount that we need to promote optimal health and longevity, which is, of course, what I'm interested in, you're interested in, everyone who's listening to this podcast is interested in. And that amount is almost certainly significantly higher for a number of different micronutrients. And then there's just like the science has evolved over the past 20 or 30 years, but the nutrient guidelines and recommendations are often 20 to 30 years out of date. So a really good, I'll give you two good examples of this. One is that the RDA for magnesium was last updated in 1997. And the RDA for magnesium was based on the average weight of a typical adult male and female in the US at that time point. And in 1997, the average body weight for an adult male was 166 pounds, and for an adult female was 133 pounds. Well, today, the average body weight for a female is closer to the average body weight for a male at that time. So it's 169 pounds, and the average body weight for a male is 196 pounds. You know, this is the obesity epidemic and the growing rates of overweight and metabolic disease. So a group of researchers in 2021, just last year, published a study arguing, hey, because the RDA for magnesium is based on body weight, and because body weights have gone up dramatically, we need to update the RDAs for magnesium, which they did. So the RDA back in 1997 was 420 milligrams a day for men and 320 for women. And the adjusted RDA today, based on the new body weight, is between about 470 and 535 milligrams for women, and about and between 575 and 660 milligrams a day for men. Wow. So we're talking about a 200 to 300 milligram per day difference in the RDA. And I just showed how, you know, most Americans are already deficient in magnesium using that previous RDA. So if you actually use this new one, we're probably close to 100% of people deficient for magnesium.
Yeah.
Now here's another one that I'm sure you see all the time. When you run a lab panel on a patient for B12, the lab range goes down to like 200 on most labs. You know, Quest, 200, LabCorp, maybe 210, 220. But we know from the research that clear signs of B12 and serious signs of B12 deficiency, like problems with DNA synthesis and repair, oxygen deliverability, et cetera, can appear at levels between 200 and maybe 400 or even 450. If you look at the range in Japan, it's 450. If you look at it in Europe, it's in the 400s. Why is our range still go down to 200? You know, it's because they make a bell curve of everybody's lab results, and we got a ton of people who are deficient in B12. So that's, you know, I could go on, but those are just two examples of how I think these numbers are even underestimates, as alarming as they are.
Yeah. So the RDA is, as you mentioned, it's antiquated in many cases, very slow to be updated. And then secondly, it's in many ways, the RDA is kind of like the conventional biomarkers that we look at, and we're seeing it in functional medicine through the lens of optimal, not average. Like you're saying, this is exactly what's going on when people look at how much a certain vitamin or mineral they should be having. Isn't that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just a little more insight into RDAs. They were originally developed during World War II to create rations for soldiers. And they're, again, the primary concern there was not like optimal nutrition. It was, how can we keep these guys alive and functioning and prevent them from having malnutrition triggered diseases like scurvy or rickets?
Yeah.
And the RDA didn't take into account gender, age, or health status, meaning that the RDA for like a teenage athlete who is training for the Olympics, or someone with a chronic disease state that's depleting nutrient levels, is the same as someone who's like a middle-aged sedentary person, you know, which is just crazy. Like we know that nutrient demands will vary hugely across those different demographics and populations, but the RDA is just one single number or range for everybody.
Yeah. People age at different speeds, and the date on your license may not represent your inner biological age at all. It's accelerated aging. I see it all the time with patients. If you're looking for ways to extend your health span and slow down the aging process, the keys to health and longevity run in your blood. That's why Inside Tracker provides you with a personalized plan to improve your metabolism, reduce your stress, improve your sleep, and optimize your health for the long haul. This was created by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics. Inside Tracker analyzes your blood, your DNA, and fitness tracking data to identify where you're optimized and where you're not. You'll get a daily action plan with personalized guidance. So you're not just getting data and, you know, you don't know what you do with the data. They're going to give you personalized guidance on the right exercise for your body, right nutrition for your body, and supplementation for your body. It's bio-individuality at its best. I love it. And what I also love is InnerAge 2.0. You have to add this. It's amazing. You can add InnerAge 2.0 to any plan for a definitive calculation of your true biological age. It's basically, you can see how you're aging from the inside out. For a limited time, get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. All you have to do is go to insidetracker.com/artofbeingwell. That's insidetracker.com/artofbeingwell. Or you can use code WillCole at checkout to get that 20% off. And screenshot and tag me, the InnerAge 2.0. I'm curious to see everybody's true biological age. How are you aging from the inside out? You can find out. Our next partner has a product I have loved for years. It is a game changer for so many people's health. My patients love it. I love it. So what is this stuff? It's Athletic Greens. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75, that's insane, right? 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day off right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy levels, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. It's so nutrient dense. It's lifestyle friendly, so whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, it doesn't matter. It also contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything. What I love about Athletic Greens, AG1 is just a simple, small micro habit with big benefits for your health. It's one thing you can do every single day for just self-care, to take great care of yourself. Athletic Greens was created when the founder experienced a ton of gut health issues, and this formula was a game changer for his gut health. And I've seen that play out in so many patients' lives as well. Right now is to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. All you have to do is just do one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's all you have to do. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D. Man, I look at labs all day long. That's my day job. And vitamin D deficiency is insanely ubiquitous. So they're going to give you a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and also 5 free travel packs of Athletic Greens. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/WillCole. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/WillCole to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Have you ever found weird things in a vagina? Have you found yourself needing multiple partners to fulfill your desires? Hey guys, I'm Dr. Jacqueline Walters, a board-certified OBGYN. It is so important that we know how and when to ask the right questions, whether you're in front of your doctor or just hanging out with your good girlfriends. Now, I wanted to create Dr. Jackie's Point of View because sometimes you need to just hear the unfiltered, good old Dr. Jackie. I will inspire, uplift, and educate women and men on the who, what, when, and where of things we balance daily. Make sure you subscribe to Dr. Jackie's Point of View and tune in every Thursday.
We touched on it when we first kicked off the conversation, but just to bring home the gravity of these nutrients that you listed off, the deficiencies. It's not just, oh, I'm nutrient deficient and this isn't good for me. How is this going to make someone feel? What are deficiencies of these vitamins and minerals implicated in, as far as you know, the people that are listening to these podcasts and what they're going through?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I think it's insidious because if you stop breathing for a few minutes, you're going to die, right? If you don't eat for, well, it depends on the person, but anywhere from a couple of weeks to a month, you're going to die. If you don't drink water for a few days, you're going to die. You can survive for a long time with nutrient deficiencies, but you will not thrive, and you can develop a whole bunch of chronic diseases, suboptimal function, fatigue, poor sleep, you know, skin issues, GI issues, et cetera. But it's very difficult to track those back to nutrient deficiencies because they tend to unfold over time, yeah. Especially with deficiencies of fat-soluble vitamins, which are stored in the body and can take months or even years to develop. So I think, first of all, that's one of the biggest challenges with this and why I've become so passionate about it is that so many people, I think, are dealing with nutrient deficiencies and they don't even know it. And a lot of their symptoms are likely related to nutrient deficiencies and they don't even know it. So to answer that question, we require at least 40 different micronutrients for normal metabolic function. And when we don't get enough of those nutrients, pretty much every system, tissue, and cell of the body will break down because nutrients are cofactors, which means they are required for all kinds of different enzymatic functions in the body. And proteins and enzymes are really running the show when it comes to what happens in the body, right? If you don't have your proteins and enzymes functioning well, nothing will work. So I'll just give you a few examples, many of which your listeners will be familiar with. Vitamin D deficiency is associated with everything from immune dysfunction, which is, of course, particularly relevant in the times we live in now, to dementia and Alzheimer's. There were new studies this last week that came out about that, to increased risk of metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. Magnesium deficiency, which we just talked about, is linked to depression, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, muscle cramps, PMS, all kinds of female health related stuff. B12 deficiency contributes to cognitive dysfunction, both reversible and irreversible neurological conditions like Parkinson's and essential tremor syndrome. There's a lot of research linking it to anemia and all kinds of problems that can happen with oxygen deliverability. Folate deficiency, perhaps best known for increasing the risk of birth neural tube defects and reducing the chance that that someone will be able to carry a pregnancy through to full term. So the easiest way to think about it is micronutrients are the fuel for the body.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
If we don't have that fuel, we're just not going to function the way that we should.
Yeah. So the raw material for your body to make all the things you need to feel great.
Yeah.
So why is this going on? Obviously, I know, but for people that are maybe newer to this and maybe talk about specific things that maybe people aren't going to think about, like soil depletion. I think you talk so eloquently about this. Why are we faced with this amount of nutrient deficiencies?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to very quickly mention what is the number one cause, but it's probably not the relevant cause for your listeners. So we're not going to dwell on it. The number one cause is that 60% of the calories that the average American consumes today come from ultra processed and refined foods. So flour, sugar, industrial seed oils, packaged and refined junk that is literally devoid of nutrients and super high in calories and other junk that we don't want. So that is the number one cause on a society-wide scale.
Yeah. But so share this episode with your family and friends, everybody.
Exactly.
Let's start
especially
there.
That part. Yeah.
Let's start there.
We'll create a little audiogram of that. But this is what surprised me, Will, and this is what really turned my attention to this over the many years I've been working with patients. Just like you, I test for nutrients for everybody that walks through the door. So what I expected to see was 10, 20, 30% of people with nutrient deficiencies. What I saw was exactly what you saw, 95% plus. Like, I can remember the people who don't have nutrient deficiency. That's kind of how it is,
right? Right.
And again, these are people who are doing all the right things, or at least many of the right things. And so I was perplexed. I was uncertain about what was going on here. And so this is why I've done such a deep dive into this topic. So here are the top reasons. You mentioned one of them. This is a change in the biome of the soil. So it's not that the soil doesn't still contain the nutrients. It's that the microbiome of the soil, due to pesticides, chemical fertilizers, monocropping, factory farming, all of the stuff we've been up to for the past, several decades, changes the biome of the soil in a similar way that we can experience changes to our gut biome from taking antibiotics and other things. So the plants can't extract the same level of nutrients from the soil. And then, of course, when we eat those plants, they don't have the same level of nutrients that they used to. So a really good example that I've seen in one of the papers I read is that we would have to eat 8 oranges today to get the same level of nutrients as our grandparents got from a single orange. That's 2 generations. That's our
insane.
Grandparents, which is scary, right? I mean, this is a big deal. Another issue is the increase in chronic disease. So that has a double whammy effect. Chronic diseases often reduce our ability to absorb nutrients from mm-hmm. food, as I know you've seen with your patients.
Yeah.
And it also increases the demand for nutrients.
Yeah, depletes
so
it.
An example would be vitamin D. We know that people with obesity have a difficult time converting sunlight into vitamin D, and they have a harder time absorbing vitamin D from food or supplements. Whereas, you know, we might be able to prescribe 2,000 to 4,000 IU of vitamin D a day to someone who's lean and healthy. We have to prescribe 10,000 IU per day to someone who is obese just for that. That's those reasons. So, you know, that's a huge problem when we have 6 out of 10 Americans who now have a chronic disease and 4 out of 10 that have multiple chronic diseases. And those mm-hmm. numbers are dramatically higher than they were in our grandparents' time. Then we have a shift to a global rather than a local food system. So the average carrot now travels 1,900 miles before it gets into your mouth.
World traveling carrots.
You know, global travel is cool. It's not so for humans. It's not so cool for
not
produce.
For your produce.
Yeah. Right. Because we know as soon as it comes out of the ground, nutrient levels start to decline. When produce is not exposed to light, photosynthesis is impaired. So you imagine a scenario where, you know, if you're in Philadelphia, let's say your carrot is picked in the Central Valley and the food basket there, it goes into a dark truck. It travels for 2,000 or 3,000 miles across the country. It goes into a warehouse somewhere. Then it gets to the market, you know, 10, 14 days later, the right. nutrient value of that carrot is like 50 to 70% lower than it was when it came out of the ground. So, you know, this is why we're both such advocates of farmers markets and, you know, and even better if you can grow stuff, if you live in a climate where you can grow some of your own food, that's fantastic. That's a similar thing with animal products. So it's been a shift from locally raised animal products and wild caught fish, chickens in your backyard and eggs coming from those chickens to factory farm animal products that come from a feedlot somewhere thousands of miles, or in some cases, many thousands of miles if they're imported from, you know, Argentina or New Zealand or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, I could go on, but I'll say one more, an increase in toxic burden. So we have a growing prevalence of heavy metals like lead and arsenic and mercury in the food supply, as well as glyphosate, bisphenol A, et cetera. All of these things bind to nutrients, like mm-hmm. particularly minerals, or minerals bind to them in an effort to sort of get rid of those toxins. And then that means we're not absorbing those nutrients, or even worse, we're absorbing the nutrients with the toxins attached to them. So,
yeah. I see it all the time on labs as well. The amount of glyphosate and environmental toxins, you're right. These are depleters and blockers of a lot of nutrients. Did you know that the way to healthy hair starts with a healthy scalp? A little care goes a long way for healthier looking hair. Way's scalp serum balances, hydrates, and soothes irritation, creating an ideal environment for hair to truly thrive. Way's scalp serum has a cult following. My patients are always asking me about it. What are my thoughts? I think it's a great tool. It's like skincare for your scalp with key ingredients such as hyaluronic acid for great skin barrier function and hydration for your skin, as well as adaptogens. And you all know I love adaptogens. And our skin is our largest organ. Way scalp serum helps support the appearance of thicker, healthier hair. It soothes irritation from tight ponytails and excessive hair detangling. And you can use this with Way's thick and full supplements for a complete hair health regimen from the inside out with the supplements and the outside in with Way's scalp serum. These are all vegan, gluten, and cruelty-free ingredients in 100% recyclable packaging. What I also love about this formula is that it contains peptides, which is very effective, again, to support healthy hair. The way to healthy hair starts with the scalp. Shop Way's all-new scalp serum by going to theouai.com. That's theway.com. And use code WILLCOLE to get 15% off your entire purchase. That's 15% off your entire order at theouai.com. With code WILLCOLE to get that special discount. Looking for a nutritious and delicious snack for the whole family? Well, look no further than Perfect Bar. With their lineup of fresh-from-the-fridge protein bars, Perfect Bar has you covered. Made with freshly ground peanut butter, organic honey, and 20 organic superfoods, Perfect Bar has a variety of products, like protein bars, as well as little snack-sized bars for on-the-go. They are all so freaking good and good for you. You are sure to find something you love. My favorite is the classic peanut butter. Oh my gosh. I have had this for years, way before they were a sponsor. And let me just, I say this probably too much, but all the sponsors on The Art of Being Well, it's because I personally love them and use them in my life, or I recommend it to patients, or both. And this is something that I love so much. Their protein bars have a cookie dough-like texture that's creamy and full of flavor, unlike other bars out there, which honestly, they taste like crap. These don't. They are so good. And now they come in snack size, packed with up to 6 grams of whole food protein and 150 calories. A little goes a long way. So Perfect Bar knows it will be love at first bite. So for a limited time, they're offering you a chance to try their refrigerated protein bars for absolutely free. Here's how it works. Sign up for email or text and upload a picture of your receipt from your local grocery store, and they'll reimburse you for the cost of one bar directly into your Venmo or PayPal account. Pretty cool, right? All you have to do is go to perfectsnacks.com/Will Cole to get a free Perfect Bar today. That's perfectsnacks.com/Will Cole to get a free Perfect Bar today. Happy snacking. Something that I learned from you years ago was you pointed me to the research of bioavailability of certain nutrients, and the form matters. And maybe people that are out there that are maybe more plant-based, right? They're a vegan eater or a vegetarian. Can you talk a little bit about the bioavailability of something like, let's just start with beta carotene and the usability of the body. And then beyond just vitamin A as an example, does the form of the nutrient matter? Thinking of folic acid versus folate, and
yeah,
go on.
Yeah, it matters a lot. And this is great because there's growing attention on this now. I would say 20 or 30 years ago, most of the nutrient density studies that were published that attempted to quantify the level of nutrients in different foods did not consider bioavailability. And that was a huge limiting factor and a big mistake because it's a crucial variable. So for example, well, just back up and define what bioavailability means. It's the portion of a nutrient that's absorbed in the digestive tract and released into the bloodstream after you eat it. And this is often surprising to people because they read a food label and they see, oh, spinach, you know, has X milligrams of calcium.
Yeah.
That means I'm going to absorb 100% of that X number of nutrients. I mean, I don't blame people for thinking that because there's no disclaimer on the food label that says, by the way, you're not going to absorb all of these nutrients.
Yeah, a warning label on spinach. Yeah,
exactly. But so for spinach, it's a really good example. The bioavailability of calcium from spinach is only 5%. So of the 115 milligrams of calcium present in one serving of spinach, you will absorb 6 milligrams of that 115 milligrams. So comparing that to milk, which, you know, gets a bad rap, and certainly dairy products can cause problems for some people, but you'd have to consume 16 cups of spinach to get the same amount of bioavailable calcium that you would get from one glass of milk. So that's a profound difference, and it's causing a lot of misunderstanding and difficulty when it comes to this whole topic of nutrient density. So what affects bioavailability? There are three factors. One is the form that the nutrient is in. So a good example, you mentioned beta carotene, which is a precursor form of vitamin A. But you have retinol, which is a preformed active form of vitamin A, which is much more readily absorbed and utilized by the body. We have to convert beta carotene into retinol in order for it to have that function. Another example is iron. So the ferrous forms of iron are found in plant foods, and those are poorly absorbed compared to the heme form of iron, which is found in animal products. Now, some people are able to make these conversions, but that ability varies tremendously from person to person. So I've seen estimates of ability to convert beta carotene into retinol that range from like 5 to 60%. So if you're a person who has a 60% capacity to make that conversion, you could do very well on a plant-based diet. You might not ever have any problems with converting to the active forms. Whereas if you're on the 5% end of the spectrum, and there are actually even some outliers who have no ability to make that conversion at all, then you're going to probably struggle if you adopt a fully plant-based diet. And I think that is part of what can explain the huge variability that we see in responses to people who adopt those types of diet. We all know people who are just killing it and thriving on vegan diets, like Rich Roll comes to mind, you know, like clearly that guy is not suffering, you know, from his diet, at least from what I can tell.
Yeah.
And then we all know people who've switched to a plant-based diet who've been harmed by that. So I think that's a simple explanation for why we can see that variability. Another factor is the presence of other nutrients that boost bioavailability. So this is called nutrient synergy. Great example using two of the nutrients we've been talking about. We need magnesium to absorb vitamin D. So if you are taking in enough vitamin D, but you're magnesium deficient, you will end up being vitamin D deficient, even though it has nothing to do with vitamin D. And there's so many other examples of that. Mm-hmm. And then conversely, the presence of nutrient inhibitors and anti-nutrients affects bioavailability. That word is so hard to say.
Yeah,
bioavailability.
We need an acronym for it or something. We have acronyms for everything else. So
that's true. So we talked about spinach, right? The reason that only 5% of calcium is absorbed from spinach is because of oxalate, oxalic acid, which is a compound that's prevalent in spinach, and that impairs the absorption of calcium from spinach. And there are lots of other examples of that. So it gets complex, right? But if you just understand those three factors, it shows why even when you're like eating good, nutritious food and you're really trying and paying attention to this, you can still get in trouble because of all of these different factors.
Yeah. A lot of people that are listening, they hear about things like MTHFR and other methylation SNPs, polymorphisms. What's your position and what's your thought on getting a folic acid and something that's on the label, a supplement that says folic acid versus another form of folate? What should people be looking out as far as B vitamins are concerned?
Yeah, good question. So folate refers to the family of compounds of vitamin B9 that we typically find in foods. So that's the form that our body is used to seeing and understands how to process. And folic acid is a synthetic form. It was created as a supplement. And again, some people are able to convert that folic acid into naturally occurring, you know, natural forms of folate that the body can utilize. But we know that there are a lot of people who don't do that conversion well, particularly people who have these SNPs or single nucleotide polymorphisms that impair that conversion in one or more ways. And what happens then is you end up with a supply of unmetabolized folic acid. And this unmetabolized folic acid, there are studies that show that it can cause all kinds of different problems in people who have these SNPs and are susceptible to it. So yeah, if you are going to supplement with something like folate, it should really be the naturally occurring forms of folate, which is like 5-MTHF or folinic acid is another kind of good intermediate form. And there are lots of other examples like methylcobalamin, adenosylcobalamin, and hydroxycobalamin are all the active forms of B12, whereas many, especially cheaper supplements, contain cyanocobalamin, and that can be more difficult to convert into the active forms. You look at vitamin A, a lot of supplements contain only carotenes and not retinol. I mean, carotenes are fine. We need them too, but I like supplements that contain retinol as well. And so, it's important to really think about these things as you're sort of putting together your strategy for getting your nutrient needs met. And the thing that's changed the most for me over the last 15 years is, and you probably know this from, because we've known each other for a while, like earlier in my career, I was pretty hardcore about insisting that we meet our nutrient needs as exclusively from food as possible. Like I knew that vitamin D, we often needed to supplement magnesium because of soil depletion and things like that. But my hope has always been that we could meet nutrient needs through food because that's the way we evolved to do it. And I think it's the best way. Mm-hmm. But because of all of those factors that we talked about before and ones that we still haven't talked about, for example, an increase in the number of people who are on special diets that are really limiting their mm-hmm. nutrient intake. And that yeah. can go everything from intermittent fasting, where they're consuming a lot less food and fewer nutrients, to diets like AIP or low FODMAP or whatever, where they're like really restricting the types of foods that they eat, to an epidemic of chronic stress, which increases the demand for nutrients, to over-the-counter and prescription medications, which decrease nutrient yeah. metformin and B12 is a famous example. Because of all these factors, I don't really think that it's possible for most of us now to get the optimum level of nutrition from diet alone. And that's like been the big, like, I was wrong. You know, I've learned this the hard way through my own experience, through treating thousands of patients, through training thousands of healthcare practitioners around the world. Like, we live in a different world now. Yeah. That's just yeah. the reality of the situation. And we can either like adapt to that world that we're living in, or yeah. suffer the consequences, basically.
Yeah. And I don't even necessarily think that you were wrong. I see it as, okay, that's the starting point. But then you're right. It gets to a certain point where you're not able to get to the optimal level through food alone. And we see it on labs. And it's just like, you have to fill in the gaps with supplementation, without a doubt.
What, yeah. And I just want to linger on what you said there, because it's super important. It's not supplementation instead of yeah. nutrient dense whole foods diet. It yeah. is, there's a reason they call them supplements. They yeah. are supposed yeah. to be supplementing something. And that something is maximizing your nutrient intake to the greatest possible extent with diet, and then filling in the gaps, like you yeah. said, where you can't do that.
Did you all hear the episode of The Art of Being Well where I talked to Sherveen? If you haven't checked out my conversation with Sherveen of Symbiotica, check it out. Mind-blowing stuff. Symbiotica, Sherveen's company, is a health supplement company designing sophisticated formulations that are scientifically proven to increase vitality and longevity by filling nutritional gaps that result from a modern day diet. What I love about Symbiotica is that they have the highest quality bioavailable ingredients on the planet and the most advanced delivery system. The bioavailability is amazing with this. They have many products. Some of the ones that I love their liposomal vitamin C. It's a synergistic formula that plays a key role in immune system function, collagen production, healthy aging. It contains bamboo silica, one of nature's most beautifying minerals required for collagen production, normal cell function, and strong connective tissue, our tendons and ligaments. I also love their D3 and K2 because it includes a CoQ10, which is a beautiful synergistic formula that promotes a balanced mood, supports heart health, and boosts overall immunity. You can take their online quiz to figure out which supplements are best for you. I love that bioindividuality. They really can get granular and target the things that are your health goals. All you have to do is use code WILLCOLE at symbiotica.com for 15% off site-wide, or you can create your custom bundle and get up to 45% off. The code applies on top of custom bundle discount. Again, that's symbiotica.com, symbiotica.com, symbiotica.com. Use code WILLCOLE at checkout for that special discount. Speaking of other nutrient deficiencies, and people hear the term phytonutrients, and then they see people in the carnivore space say, we don't need plant foods. What's the deal with this? What are people to think? Do we need phytonutrients, or?
Man, I feel so sorry for the average consumer. You know, like, it's enough for us when we live and breathe this stuff every day. And then for people who don't have the background and training, just all the controversy and the hostility too, it's like almost like a religious kind of debate. So yeah, I mean, I'll tell you my perspective, Will, which I think is pretty similar to your perspective. And I'll just recognize that there are people out there who have different perspectives. You know, I think if you look at three different lines of evidence, if you look at the evolutionary perspective, like what our ancestors ate, as far as we can tell, you know, we don't have perfect data on that because food decomposes pretty quickly, but we have a lot of very good anatomical, archaeological evidence for that. And then if we look at, you know, modern clinical evidence in terms of, you know, what tends to work best, And then we look at biochemical evidence for like what our bodies seem to need. All of those, in my opinion, converge on humans thriving with a combination of both plant and animal foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's still a huge template to choose from. You know, we know of populations that had 5% of their calories from animal foods and 95% from plant foods. Yet those animal foods were so important to those groups that they would often travel for miles and miles to trade, you know, some of their foods for those animal foods. On the other end of the spectrum, we have populations that consume maybe 80 to 90% of their calories from animal foods, especially at certain times of year, mm-hmm. like the Inuit in the Arctic, where it's covered with snow and frost, and they're not growing any vegetables or plant foods at that time of year. And I think that that's where the individualization comes in. Like, where do you fall on that spectrum of plant and animal foods? That's going to depend a lot on your genes, your epigenetics, your health status, your goals, your preferences, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I think that even though the phytonutrients are not essential in the sense that we can survive without them, I think there's now abundant evidence that they are extremely important if you want to thrive and have optimal health. So, you know, I don't really buy that argument that says, well, they're not essential, which means we can survive without them. And so therefore we don't need them. The one doesn't follow the other. There's a lot of things that we can survive without, but it doesn't mean we don't want them in order to feel and perform our best, right?
Yeah. Fully agree. You said it perfectly. I agree with you 100%. And that's the art of it all, right? The bioindividuality of where on that Venn diagram do you, and I would say this too, and I'm sure you've seen this clinically, is that at certain parts of our life, let's just say somebody that has an unhealthy gut, has a very reactive immune system, they may lean one way, and then as their body heals, they may evolve out of that.
Absolutely. That's why, you know, health status is one of those key factors, and genetics also play a role. So for example, lactase persistence, you know, the ability to digest dairy products into adulthood. A full 2/3 of the global population doesn't have that. So if you're in that group, you might have trouble with dairy. But if you're in the group that has lactase persistence, which is typically like Northern Europeans, Scandinavians, East Africans, populations that have a long history of raising cattle for mm-hmm. milk, then you could thrive on dairy products. Another one is salivary amylase production. So that's the production of an enzyme called amylase that breaks down starch. So if you have large amounts of salivary amylase, you come from a genetic background which has eaten starch for a long time, you could do very well eating lots of rice and sweet potatoes and potatoes and things like that. But if you come from a population that doesn't have that kind of history and you don't produce that amylase, then you might have trouble with that. Japanese coastal people produce an enzyme, their gut bacteria produces an enzyme that allows them to break down the complex polysaccharides in seaweed and in other sea vegetables. Yeah. Whereas a lot of people don't. So they eat those things, they get gas, bloating, all kinds of issues, and they're not breaking it down.
Yeah. And I, on that note, I have people focused on these like seaweeds, dulse, nori, kelp, kombu, these type of things. And the iodine levels don't even come up the way that I want it to. And I think it has something to do with their microbiomes and actually absorbing these things appropriately.
Yeah. Here's the cool thing that there are some studies that suggest that if you sort of ease into that, that there's a horizontal transfer of the genes from the microbes in the seaweed to the microbes in our gut that then allow us to start developing the ability to digest and absorb those polysaccharides. So it's just amazing. It's pretty cool.
It is. And I'm thinking, as you're telling me about the research around ancestral diets and us not having perfect data because food decomposes, one caveat, silver lining to the modern American diet is that in thousands of years, they will have data because our food doesn't decompose. There will be Twinkies thousands of years
from now. Just see what happens when you put margarine and leave it out in the garage or something. Rats won't even eat it. You know, if that tells you something.
Yeah. All right, my friend, the podcast is called The Art of Being Well. And this part of the podcast, this is Chris Kresser's Art of Being Well. I'm going to just throw out different questions and I'm going to learn more about your wellness ideas, tips, tricks, like learn from the best. Are you up for this challenge?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. What's the worst tasting healthy food that you still think it tastes horrible, but you will eat it because of its nutrient density?
I'll occasionally eat natto. It's a tie between natto for K2, which is the Japanese fermented soy product. People love it or hate it. I'm definitely one of the people that hates it. And liver. You know, I got to say, I've been a huge proponent of liver and organ meats for so many years because when you look at the nutrient density scale, especially scales that consider bioavailability, 4 of the top 7 most nutrient dense foods are organ meats: liver, mm-hmm. kidney, heart, and spleen. I cannot stand the taste and texture of organ meats,
yeah.
But I have forced myself to do it sometimes.
So. Yeah. Hey, I mean, the people are hearing from 2 recovering vegans and vegetarians. So
yes. Yeah, I was a vegan, macrobiotic vegan chef at one point and a raw food guy. So yeah.
Or organ meats are an acquired taste. I agree with you. This is a good segue. What are 2 supplements that have been the biggest game changers for you personally?
Organ supplement. So that's my sort of admission here is like, I can't do organ meats as often as I want to. I have tried every possible way to prepare them that I've shared with people. Cutting them up, freezing them raw, swallowing them as
ice
pills,
chips, yeah.
adding to, you know, ground meat with spices. Like my wife tries to slip it to me in different dishes and not tell me because she's like convinced that it's a psycho, you know, it's yeah. like a sort of mental thing. And yeah. every time that without fail, I have detected it and just like have this reaction. So yeah, like a high quality grass-fed organ meat supplements have been game changers for me. And in fact, I've created my own for that reason, which yeah. we could talk about in a second, but just more energy, better sleep, better performance, sexual vitality and vigor, better recovery from exercise, better mood, because they're just nutrient powerhouses. You know, it's a food-based form, but a super concentrated form of nutrients. So that's definitely number one. Number two would be mushrooms, a mushroom supplement. Again, I made one of them for this reason. I got fascinated with mushrooms when I trained in Chinese medicine as an herbalist. A lot of people know that mushrooms have been used for 7,000 plus years in traditional Chinese medicine and other traditional forms of medicine. And, you know, I read some of Paul Stamets' books and just like developed this huge appreciation for fungi as a species and what it has to offer from a nutritional perspective and also from an environmental perspective, like an ecological perspective. They're just incredible compounds that yeah. seem to have this kind of intelligence that we don't even fully understand yet. And yeah. now, in addition to those 7,000 years of experience of people using them, as you know, Will, there's, you know, this really hot topic in the research community now with like 400 studies on turkey tail alone, and they're being looked at for anti-cancer effects, mm-hmm. ability to lower blood sugar, like lower the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. Lion's mane has been shown to actually regenerate neurons. I use it in patients with like Parkinson's and essential tremor to help address those conditions. I mean, they're pretty amazing. And again, 100% food-based and natural.
Love that. So would you say those are your 2 favorite mushrooms if you had to pick turkey tail?
Those are the top 2, yeah. Mushrooms and organs, I think.
Got it.
Because again, they're 100% food-based, bioidentical nutrients. It's just like adding to your diet. Yeah. Where I like certain species of mushrooms, but there are certain types of mushrooms that are highly therapeutic, which are not so nice to eat. They're very yeah. bitter or chewy, or you have to go through a lot of different steps to make them edible, or, you know, at least for me, palatable. So I still do eat mushrooms, and I recommend that everybody does, but I also augment that with the supplement that I made.
Love that. We'll talk about that before we go. What is the weirdest wellness thing that you're willing to admit on a podcast that you have done for your health?
Oh man, there's so many. I don't even know where to pick because, you know, I was like so near death, you know, incredibly ill. So there was like nothing I didn't try, basically.
Right.
Man, that's a tough one. Let's see.
And weird is relative, right? I mean, weird is so relative.
It's like what some people might think is weird is totally normal. Yeah, I think probably, like setting aside like diet supplement, like, cause all of that stuff is all still falls in the same category, you know, like you could have weirder dietary choices or weirder supplements, but they're all still in a fairly like straightforward category. I think, you know, some of the work I did with shamans, some people might consider pretty weird, especially for a guy who's like really science driven and oriented like me. But I worked with a couple different shamans at one point during my process who were doing things that I certainly didn't understand, you know, at least from the Western paradigm of understanding, but I was open. You know, I was open to the fact that there are things we don't understand, that we are, as human beings, we're made of vibrating particles and waves, right? If you understand physics. Yeah. And I was just open to the possibility that something could happen there, and something did happen there. I'm still not sure exactly what it was, but that work that I did with shamans and also some medicine work, you know, with ayahuasca and other psychedelics and a pathogen were really instrumental in helping me to move through some difficult times when I was really sick and really like needed to be able to zoom out and see my life and my health from a different perspective. So I attribute that medicine work that I did with guides and shamans to be as one of the most important things that I have done for my healing process. And I continue to explore that and experiment with that in different ways.
Love that. What's a book that you've read in the last year? It could be fiction, nonfiction, that's been the biggest game changer for you personally.
There are two that come to mind. One is called Transcend by Scott Barry Kaufman. This is he's a psychologist. I had him on my podcast recently. And do you know him, Will?
I don't.
I'll definitely love to make an intro. I think you guys would have a great conversation.
Thanks.
He studied Maslow's work, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and kind of updated it, you know, decades later with and created a kind of framework for understanding what helps humans to thrive and flourish, especially in the midst of difficult circumstances. And so what helps us to transcend, as the title of the book would suggest, the day-to-day struggles of life and really achieve our full potential. So that was an amazing book. And I've read a lot of books like that, but it was just, you know, it was one of those books where I'm like literally highlighting half of every page and Kindle's telling me, no, you can't highlight that much. You're not allowed to like
just one do that highlight. Many highlights.
You're like stealing the whole book. And I'm like, no, it's just amazing. And then the second one is Breath by James Nestor, which I'm sure you've read or seen or heard about.
Heard of it.
I mean, look, when we think about the things that are influential in health, like breath, food, and water are really at the top of the list. Like, you know, breathing is something, as I said before, like you can go long, weeks without eating. You can go days without drinking. You cannot go very long without breathing. And yet many of us don't breathe properly. And we go our whole lives without breathing properly, and we get into a state of just suboptimal health because we're not getting the oxygen that we need and we're not breathing normally. So that was a game-changing book. You know, I was aware of a lot of it, but it's a book that I share with a lot of friends, patients, colleagues, et cetera, because I think it's something that is relatively unexamined by many people.
Love that. Well, we'll put the link to all the things you just talked about in the show notes at drwillcole.com. So before we go, my friend, tell me about Adapt Naturals. I want to know about the Core Plus Bundle because I need to get me some. Tell us about this years in the making, really, that's out to the public.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing this, as I mentioned, for 15 years. And all in that time, didn't do much with supplements other than, you know, prescribe other products. And the reason I'm doing this now is that I think there's a big need that hasn't been filled, which is what are the nutrients that we are most likely to fall short in because of all the factors we've been talking about throughout the entire podcast that we can supplement with just to close those gaps and ensure that we can feel and perform our best. And then that's the core. And then what are the plus things that can actually take us to the next level? And, you know, mushrooms and organs and tocotrienols I would put in that category where, I mean, we don't necessarily need mushrooms. There are lots of people who and populations around the world who've lived their entire lives for many generations without eating any mushrooms. But mushrooms are incredible. And we're just like beginning to understand the potential benefits that these compounds have. So we created this Core Plus bundle. It's a daily stack of 5 products. There's a multivitamin, mineral, and phytonutrient blend. There's the organ product. There's the mushroom product. There's magnesium, which is not surprising given what we've talked about.
Yeah.
And then there's a delta and gamma tocotrienol product, which we didn't have time to discuss. But this is a relatively newly discovered form of vitamin E that is much more effective and potent than tocopherols, which are the kind of better known form of vitamin E, and don't have the long-term risks associated with tocopherol supplementation. So they're designed to be taken every day. And really for anybody, like no matter where people are starting from, I wanted to create something that was just like set and forget. I think people are so confused about the supplement market.
Yep.
And I'm sure you do this too, Will. Like when we have new patients, we have them bring in their supplements.
Yeah.
People come in with their shopping bags, you know, which I call the supplement graveyard, like products that people have bought. They have no idea why they're taking them. They, you know, their aunt might've recommended it like 5 years ago. They're still taking it.
Yeah.
Dr. Oz
recommended it.
Dr. Oz, whatever. And they're either not helping or in some cases, as we've both seen, they're actually causing harm in some situations. There's supplements that people shouldn't be taking. And so I wanted to just like cut through all of that confusion and create a really simple plan for people to follow that they can be confident in, that are evidence-based from a clinician who knows what he's doing because he's, you know, has a lot of experience and that are just super high quality. So that's the Adapt Naturals Core Plus.
Love it. So where can people get it? And we'll put the links for everybody.
Yeah, adaptnaturals.com. And the last thing I want to say about it is I'm not joking when it comes to like, these are meant to be on top of a whole foods diet. And we're so serious about that, that we created an app called the Core Reset, which helps people to dial in their nutrition, their sleep, their stress management, and their movement. And we're giving it away for free to anybody that buys the supplements, because we don't want you to just take the supplements. We want you to do that as part of a whole healthy lifestyle approach. So the app is free and you can use it for the rest of your life. It's got recipes, meal plans, guided meditations, guided movement practices, guided stress management practices. And I just want people to be able to use that as a resource, you know, forever.
That's super smart, Chris. Super smart. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm excited for people to try Adapt Naturals. Come back anytime, my friend. It's been too long.
Well, yeah, it's been way too long. And I'd love to have you on the show, reach out about that. And
yeah,
and
for sure.
Would love to come back anytime.
Thank you.
Miss seeing you. And hopefully now that things are a little less crazy, we can hook up in person sometime.
Be great. I can't wait. Tell a family I said hi. Wait, so what's your podcast? You talk about the show. I want to give it a shout out.
Revolution Health Radio. So yeah, it's been podcasting since 2008, believe it or not.
He's the OG.
Dinosaur.
He's the OG podcaster, guys. One of the first. My friend, talk soon.
Thanks, Will.
At the end of every episode, I'll be answering a question from one of you guys. Nothing is off limits. Ask me anything. And you can send your questions over to me on Instagram or Facebook. As a functional medicine practitioner, it's been fun seeing the questions that have already come in on different food philosophies, wellness trends, and ways to approach overall mental, emotional, and physical health and well-being. Thanks for those. And I'm looking forward to seeing what else is on your mind. Now it's time for another Ask Me Anything. Today's question is from Kaylin. Kaylin asks, is alcohol okay to drink if you are recovering from SIBO or no? Great question, Kaylin. So SIBO, for people that need a little backstory here, SIBO stands for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. SIBO, if you're in certain parts of the world. I think some of my patients in the UK and Australia call it SIBO. Anyways, we say it SIBO on this side of the Atlantic. And SIBO is an underlying cause of many digestive problems. So people that are struggling with painful, uncomfortable bloating, IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, acid reflux, GERD, indigestion, it is associated with many different autoimmune problems. Some researchers even classify SIBO as possibly having an autoimmune component in and of itself. It certainly is associated with other autoimmune problems like Hashimoto's disease or autoimmune thyroiditis. This is one of the top types of cases that I see for the past 12 years. Thousands of patients I've seen with SIBO over the years, and we can heal from it and overcome it. There's certainly no quick fixes for these sort of things, but it's one that we would diagnose through a SIBO breath test and other labs to put it in context to understand what is driving that SIBO. SIBO doesn't happen randomly in a vacuum. SIBO is typically caused by a decrease in something called migrating motor complex, or MMC, sort of this innervation, this wave-like motion between the brain and the gut-brain axis, and there's a lack of MMC, so bacteria start to migrate from the large intestine, the colon where it should be, into the small intestines. And then the bacteria like to ferment and consume foods, especially higher FODMAP foods, which are fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. That's the acronym FODMAPs. It's fermentable sugars that are in things like onions and garlic and cruciferous vegetables and grains and legumes and, you know, beans, things like this. So not that any of those foods are inherently bad. We just have to heal the SIBO so you can reintroduce those foods. And that's what I get to work on with patients. So let's get down to this question. Is alcohol okay if you have SIBO and are trying to recover from SIBO? That's what Kaylin wants to know. So you probably know, if you listen to the podcast any length of time or follow me on Instagram, you'll know that I talk about this pretty frequently. People want to know about the alcohol, guys. It is a common question that I get. They want to know, hey, is it healthy or not? Or if so, like, what's the best kind? How much is too much? How much is healthy? All right, so here's the deal. There's no healthy amount of alcohol. There's just what's the least offensive to the body, and is it worth it for you? And certainly, as a clinician, I am a pragmatist with these sort of things, and I want to find the best sources of alcohol. So there's definitely a context that we need to understand with this. But alcohol is a neurotoxin. It is stressful on the gut itself. It can be disruptive to the microbiome, and it's associated with increased intestinal permeability or leaky gut syndrome, of which SIBO is also associated with this as well. So no, it's not something that I would recommend if somebody's trying to heal their gut and heal SIBO specifically. There was a recent study published in Nature Communications, I believe, recently in the scientific journals. They found this sort of reprogramming of our gut microbiota, all the beneficial bacteria in our gut. It's caused by something called acetate. This reprogramming of the gut microbiome is caused by something called acetate, which is produced by our liver. Think about this. And the liver diffuses back into the intestines, where it becomes a carbon source for bacterial growth. It's sort of like dumping fertilizer on the garden, and the liver is dumping acetate into the gut to grow bacteria. And this results in sort of an explosion of imbalanced bacterial growth, benefiting some bacterial species and not others. This is what we'd call dysbiosis, or bacterial imbalance. So think of it as sort of weeds overgrowing in this gut garden. So acetate is a beneficial nutrient. It's used in cellular metabolism, has roles in appetite regulation. It's needed for energy production. It's needed for healthy immune system response. And in healthy, balanced levels, acetate promotes overall health, from improved cardiac function, heart function, to enhanced red blood cell production, and even memory function. But in excess levels, again, it's about balance, excess acetate is associated with metabolic changes linked to different chronic diseases, including cancer. But many different types of inflammatory problems are associated with this excess production. What the study found was that chronic alcohol consumption was associated with lower intestinal expression of antimicrobial molecules. Pretty astounding. People with alcohol-related liver disease specifically commonly have bacterial overgrowth, which is an interesting connection here. This is the mechanism that researchers are looking at, this acetate connection. So basically, alcohol consumption, according to the study, really, it points to the fact that alcohol consumption will disrupt microbiome balance. It will decrease antimicrobial molecules. The checks and balances, the regulatory mechanisms of the microbiome are lost. And in some people, that can contribute to bacterial overgrowth. So if you needed another reason to reconsider your relationship with alcohol, there's another study. If somebody's going to drink, I would say organic, regenerative, biodynamic wine would be one, because it's, and make sure it's low alcohol. Something like Dry Farm Wines or some comparable company that's curating wines like this. And hard kombucha. But again, is it healthy? No, I would say no. But can it be part of a healthy lifestyle in moderation? Yes, it can be. But don't kid yourself. It's not a health food. If somebody's trying to actively heal their gut, it's something that I would hold off on for at least a few months, depending on their recovery time. The gut can take time to heal, but it's something that over time, as their gut heals, we can talk about what reintroduction looks like for them. Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back every Monday and Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.
Note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.